Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio, a show featuring people and companies who are making a positive contribution to the world. This show will help you learn how to apply success principles in every area of your life so that you can make the most out of your skills and talents and accomplish more of your goals. To find out more about the show, please visit www.journeytosuccessradio.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey to Success Radio. My name is Daniel Hanzelka. I'm a business coach, reset warrior, author, and speaker. I'm the co-creator of the Reset Formula, and my mission in business and life is to empower entrepreneurs to discover the truth in the four core areas of life: faith, family, fitness, and finance, so they can experience the epic life they want. You can learn more about me at resetwarrior.com. Again, that's resetwarrior.com. Now, today we have a special show. I have a co-host today. It's the amazing Diana Dittinger. I had the opportunity to interview her earlier this month. Diana is an innovative change maker and influencer thought leader who inspires people to take the journey to find themselves. She recently published her book, Modus Vivendi, Your Life, Your Way. Diana discovered the formula for total life fulfillment. The formula is a fruit of 20 years of rigorous scientific brain research. Her clients get life-changing fast results to create the life they desire with grace and ease. She was born in U.S., in Chicago, Illinois, and Diana currently resides in northern Italy with her four children. Now, Diana, we have an amazing show. I want to welcome you to the show, and why don't you introduce our very special guest today, Dr. Joanne White.
Yeah, super. Thanks, Daniel. Yeah, what an honor then to introduce our special guest today. And she's an international best-selling and award-winning author and speaker. Dr. Joanne White has over 20 years' experience helping others reach their full potential. So we're all full potential people here. She was inspired to pursue a career in special education where she worked with a young girl with special needs at a day camp. So Joanne later pioneered a program for the Philadelphia school system for children who weren't allowed to attend public school until a federal law mandated that every state in the U.S. serve these children too. More Heaven, Because Every Child is Special, is the title of her book and is based on a true story of educating these kids and the successes and challenges they face. That is so moving. We are so happy to have you here on the show with us, Dr. Joanne.
Thank you so much, Diana and Daniel. It's my pleasure, and I'm very, very excited about this opportunity.
It's great to have you on our show. And Dr. Joanne, you have written the new book, and More Heaven. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the background of the book, and also why did you write the book?
Okay. So firstly, I wrote the book, and you're going to laugh a little bit, but I wrote the book many years ago. It was like it was ahead of its time. And I wrote it while I was teaching these children with special needs. There was, like you said, Diana, there, I piloted this program. And if truth were told, many people did not want it to be successful. It was an educational headache for people. Parents of so-called regular kids were very apprehensive about it. And there were no, it was like, okay, this is your class, and you don't go to gym, you don't go to art. It's you and these kids. So I started the program. And it started with one girl, that little girl, that one little girl that this book is really inspired by. And it grew. She had autism, and it began to burgeon into more kids. And it really became successful. And it really was a way of showing the school system, Philadelphia school system, and others that educating these kids. There was special education beforehand, but these kids were presumably severely autistic or severely emotionally challenged or whatever, and so they didn't seem to fit into school. And before that mandate, many schools were left off the hook because all they had to say was, well, this kid is too difficult, we don't have the services, we don't have the program, and the parents either had to, if they had resources, financial resources, maybe they were able to send their kid to a private school or sometimes home educate these kids, and sometimes they were in schools but kind of warehouse. So this was a totally new program. And what happened was I was teaching this girl, and every day I would wake up, and there was this one line. Her real name was Tracy. There was this one line in my head that would not go away about this little girl, almost like the beginning of something. And finally, one day I said to Spirit, my guides, God, whomever, whatever, the universe, okay, I hear you. And I started to write down. I started to write, and I was keeping copious notes about the kids and the program, and it just started to take off. And at that time, I was young. And also, I have to say that with a little bit of a joke. And also, the climate, both the educational climate and the climate in terms of the culture was not ready for a book like this. When I sent it to many mainstream publishers at the time, and again, it needed editing and blah blah blah. But
what year are you talking about? Because you say a while ago.
Okay, we're talking about like 1977, around.
Wow.
Okay, so.
I can get that exactly.
Right.
There was just a whole different kind of openness to difference. I mean, what was, because I was living in the Midwest, grew up in the Midwest, and I remember even when there was just the segregation or desegregation, the busing, and you know, it was really the beginning of let's just open our arms to people of a different skin color. So you can imagine the special needs children. Wow, what a pioneer!
Yes, the thing is though that it was about, just like you're talking about civil rights for you know, people of a different color. This was the civil rights and to a large extent for these kids who were denied access. So when I wrote the book, like I said, I also had shown it. I was going to school for my master's, and I showed it to, and I was going for my master's at that time in special education. And the two professors who read it said, oh, we'll use it as a text. And so they sent me to an educational publisher who said, I closed my door, I laughed and I cried, but this is fiction. And I made it fiction for a reason. But it's fiction, he said, and we only publish, you know, nonfiction. So I don't, he said, maybe, possibly, maybe, if you wrote a prologue and an epilogue, we might be able to do something. And like I said, I was young and I said, no. Well, today it has a prologue and an epilogue, and it's gone through. But I grew up, too, and it's gone through many, many metamorphoses. And I feel that the time is right. We've waited. It's, you know, I've waited all these years, and I've put it to sleep many times, and then something would happen that would bring it out again. So here we are.
Yeah, well, can you tell us about the program? Like, what differentiates, you know, how you propose, or your program, your special recipe that you feel is more beneficial?
Well, I don't know that it's more beneficial, but at that time, these kids, many of these kids were at a very low academic level, or that one girl did not really talk, and she spoke, you know, you would say something, you would say, hello, Diana, and she would say, hello, Diana, how are you today? How are you today? And it's called echolalia. So one of the things that I did, and again, it was very much, I believe, intuitive, was to really get into their world. And that's why the book is fiction, because how do you presume to what their world is when nobody's talking or whatever? So a lot of she used to move and twirl, and I would do some of those things with her and play, and we had one young boy who in the book is called Martin, and this boy came into the, and this is, you know, it's based on these kids, and he came in with many many characters that he believed, you know, he talked to them, he brought them to school, and so some of what we did in the class is we welcomed the characters. Now somebody would say, no, you're not supposed to do that. But what I felt and what I still believe, and there's some research about that today, is that by getting into their world, by showing them that their world was okay, I was then able to introduce them to my world. So it was about trust in my world in terms of academics, in terms of things, you know, reading, of socialization. And so that's I don't know how different it was, but I think it was pretty different from what
was
going on.
Yeah, but I think you really got, I think you got that key word, because, you know, I've been doing corporate training for, you know, the past 20 years, and that one word is trust. And trust opens so many doors. When you gain the trust of people, and it's the same in a corporation with a team of CEOs that want to get their results. When a child, you know, trusts you, that's when they just, you know, open up and you have access to them sharing what they're really feeling, or you know, they don't feel ridiculed for their difference. Yeah, that's amazing. Will you,
right.
I love your
and
quote,
many of
you
these,
say, yeah, go ahead.
Many of these kids were ridiculed, Diana and Daniel. They were bullied. Actually, one of the girls, it's in the book, but it was a true story. One of the young girls was bullied just by, you know, standing at the bus stop waiting for a bus, for the school bus, and because people didn't, like, you know, we're talking about differences. People did not know, and we're still struggling with that, and it's now 2016, but people have trouble accepting differences. So my premise was, how can I ask these kids to get into reading and get into everything if I'm not acknowledging where they are, who they are, and accepting that? And to me, that was building that bridge of trust, because I was embracing their world and saying who you are and what you're doing is okay, and now look at this world and let's try this. And it worked. It really worked.
Wow.
That little...
Have you been able to keep in touch with any of these families?
No, unfortunately not. And the school changed, too. I actually found out it's now a high school. I'm no longer in Philadelphia. I'm actually in New Jersey. And I think it's a high school, but no.
I bet the book will be out there, and you'll find out that someone will pick it up and they'll recognize your name and they'll write you an email and, oh, we want to thank you. Because, you know, that kind of stuff happens, that we're so connected nowadays. That book will fall in the hands of someone and they'll see your face and your name and say, wow, what a life changer you were. That's great. I love your quote that you say, we have the capacity to manifest the inner gifts and talents within us to fulfill our own desires and pressing goals, and also help others and make a difference in their lives. And you really have made a difference in so many people's lives through all your work. I mean, you have this curriculum or this CV of speaking, writing, coaching. You know, you're the CEO, the founder of the Power of Your Life Network. You've got the Broadcasting Network, the Power You, you know, online university. You know, you help both families and businesses. You're an executive director, and you host the Power Your Life TV and radio show. I mean, is there something you don't do, Joanne?
I have to tell you, I have a confession, Diane. That is,
okay.
I was very shy when I was younger, and if I tell that to people, like I've told that to a couple of people, a couple of friends, and when we're at, you know, having dinner, and it's a conversation, I'll say I was shy, and nobody believes it. I remember one of the teachers, my mother went up to speak to one of the teachers, and she said, you know, your daughter is really quiet. She's a late bloomer, so I'm making up for it. But I also believe, and that's sort of my philosophy, I believe that we're here to serve and we're here to make a difference. And so in the many ways that we can do that, we're also here to grow ourselves. So it was first radio, and it seemed like, oh, well, this is something I don't know. It's a little bit scary, and so let's try it and get past that, because we're supposed to be able to expand ourselves and do what we don't think is possible and get to that place of, wow, look at that. I never believed I could do it. I did it. And I think that's important for all of us to have that ability and to be able to push ourselves beyond what we think is possible. So that's what I keep doing in the service of others.
Well, even you had some career shifts where, you know, you went into both, you know, from the expert training and, you know, the image and, you know, branding specialist, and also the therapeutic energy healing. How do you integrate that with the work that you do now?
Well, firstly, the reason that I started to, I've always had guides, or I've been meditating sort of since I was younger without knowing that that's what it was. I remember walking and finding a quiet rock to sit on. So that was a natural transition. But I had an injury whereby I wasn't really able to walk or to sit. I was in pain, chronic pain for a whole, I don't know, it seemed like forever, but it was a really very difficult year. And not to knock the medical profession, but I just was not getting the answers that I was looking for. I was getting, okay, you could do this, and I'd try this, and then something else went out of whack because I was trying something for my knee, and then my back went out, and blood, it just went on and on and on. And so I started initially to look for alternative ways of healing, because I had to heal myself. I had to get out of, you know, there was more in life to do. So I started to look at all different kinds of energy healing and hypnosis and different kinds of ways to change me and to heal me, and many of these were very effective, and I was able to walk. I remember the first time I was able to be in a car after a year of not being, I could either stand or lie down. That was those were the two choices. And I thought, I'll never be able to see the beach or the shore. I remember going to the shore after being able to sit in the car and drive there and just being so grateful, and the tears were streaming, you know, for joy and in gratitude, because that was special. So that's, I thought, wow, this, you know, this is incredible. If I can do that for myself, there are so many ways to be able to introduce this with other people, and I do combinations sometimes, you know, with coaching and doing energy work or accessing people's inner guidance and teaching them how to do that. It just all feels right. I think people need choices and need ways. And one way doesn't always work for anybody. And I believe that if I'm here to help someone, I have to be the resource to be able to kind of find whatever technique is going to open the door for people and is going to help them. And so I do have a plethora of, I guess, different kinds of tools, resources that I've...
Yeah, well, I mean, it just depends on if people need a mental approach, an emotional approach, a spiritual approach. I mean, you know, we're all complete. And even getting back to the special needs children, we have, you know, I come from a family of both my parents have 8 and 9 brothers and sisters, and so this big, huge family of, you know, 250 at least blood relatives. And, you know, we have a couple of Down's cousins and autistic cousins. And really what I've found is the pureness of the soul of these special needs children has been, in our family context, they have united us even stronger because of the purity, the genuine, their outlook. I mean, it really is... You know, even you know, my aunt, who unexpectedly, you know, at age 42, has this surprise child, who is really the favorite cousin among everyone, and she always said, "Thank God, you know, God gave us this child, because both for their family, but you know, 250 cousins, talk about the gift." That I know it's difficult for families if they're not prepared, or maybe if they don't have a support group. But you know, maybe their let's say mental scholastic ability is not up to what we would call par for their, you know, age, but their emotional ability, this soul connection, let's put it that way, they really are pure when you can get their trust, like, you know, you were talking about, and really get into their world. They have so much joy to share. And I,
you know, I totally believe that. And then there are children that are on the spectrum who have these incredible gifts. There was one boy in the class who was able to, I mean, he would be able, I sometimes lose sense of direction. Well, this kid, if you told him how to get somewhere once, he would never forget it. He'd be able to find things. And then there are some children on the autism spectrum who are so gifted mathematically and brilliant, really brilliant. I remember meeting a young man. I guess he was like not in my class, but he was probably like 16, and he painted. And somebody said to him, you know, what happens to you when you paint? And he said, I pick up the brush. This isn't the verbatim part. He just said, you know, I pick up the brush and something happens and it goes like, ah. Oh. He used that word. And you could feel the joy that he got from painting and that he was conveying, through his painting was incredible, and you could feel that joy. It was just amazing.
Dr. Janet,
it's
great to hear all of these stories. Now, why would you say that the More Heaven book that you have actually put together, and you mentioned it's taken you quite a few years to get it to where it is, where you're publishing it now, why is it really important for today? What's really the importance of that?
Well, the importance of it is, firstly, I believe, Daniel, that even though we've come far, there's still a lot of inroads. I mean, I was just talking to a parent about 2 weeks ago who has an autistic son, and she's having problems with school. They're changing his program, and many of these children have difficulty with transitions, and they're just doing it because it's more of a financial thing rather than thinking about these kids. And there are still, I just did some research, and there it is a place in California, I won't mention where, but this family was living in a community for 7 years, and they had an autistic son, and the son was a little bit, I don't know how disruptive, but the son was disruptive in the community, and the neighbors sued the family. Now, they also were concerned that property value was going to go down, so the family moved, and two of the people who were still suing never dropped the lawsuit. So it seems like, yes, we have more programs, and yes, Sesame Street is going to have or already has an autistic character just recently, but there are still many inroads that need to be made. There's even some controversy within the community about, well, we have to fix these kids. We have to, you know, and many parents who, like you were talking about earlier, Diana, the beauty and the specialness. Well, why are you gonna try to figure out what's wrong with my kid? Why are we only focusing on that rather than looking at the specialness, the gifts that these kids not only bring to their families, but to the world and to us? And I think that there's a lot more to be done.
Would you say it's lack of just people not understanding what, you know, really what's at the core of it, or is it just lack of education? Or what would you say that is probably the, you know, the reason behind kind of, you know, people not really knowing? I mean, obviously, lack of information or not knowing is definitely the large part of that. But are there really places where people can go and educate themselves? Besides, I mean, obviously, you wrote this book that's going to help with that. But are they outside of things where people can get more educated about this?
Well, I'm sure that there are lots of places on the internet now, and communities, and a lot of there are people like Temple Grandin. She was on my radio show, my Power Your Life radio show. Actually, she was on my TV show, my Power Your Life TV show, sorry. And she has autism, and there was a film made about her, and she really changed. She has a PhD, and she changed the way she's an animal husbandry. So she changed the way, because of the way that she was able to see what was going on with animals, she changed the way that they were doing business with animals to make it more humane because of what her abilities and what she was able to bring. So I think there's a lot out there that's really important. And I also think that it's important to recognize that even though we're different in so many ways, there are things about, we all cry, we all laugh, we all have fears, we all have accomplishments. And I think one of the goals when I was young was to kind of say, look, we're all, you know, these kids are like us. They live, they breathe, they cry, and maybe there's a degree in terms of something that they do or something that they don't do, but recognize how connected we all are. I think that's really very important.
Would you
say, it's funny go ahead, Daniel.
Would you see, as far as, you know, when you're talking about it, most of these things would be based on obviously behavior or something that's happening with these children. And again, you know, as you mentioned, I believe that, you know, they're special in their ways. That a lot of times there is a reason behind that as far as what they're doing and how they're doing. And I think kind of the ignorance of a lot of people is they just look at them more from the outside and not fully understanding what is really going on. And they don't even try to understand their world and their view of what's happening, right?
Right. You know, you were talking, and it reminds me, just 2 years ago, I was waiting for someone. I was sitting in a diner. I was waiting for a colleague of mine, and there was a woman in, I guess it was two booths ahead of me, and her son had Tourette's, and with somebody with Tourette's, sometimes they can't control just outbursts, and so sometimes it could be very uncomfortable for people, but they have difficulty like really monitoring that or being able to control that. This woman went around to every table 2 years ago, to every table, and said, my son has Tourette's, and that's why. And I thought, you know, I mean, I knew it because I recognized it, but I thought, why does she have to go and have to do that? She did that so that people didn't think he was rude, to make way for more acceptance. But the responsibility had, you know, she felt the responsibility that she had to go do that to create a more of a receptive environment. What about the day when she doesn't have to do something like that, when it's just, okay, so he has outbursts and he's sitting in a diner, and so what? I mean, it's okay. He's not hurting anybody.
Yeah, because for sure, you know, just the tension of the people around. I mean, even if you just think of a mother with a normal baby, when the baby will start to cry and scream and she gets tense, usually the baby cries more. When the mother is comforting, and when the mother just sort of, you know, hums or sings or soothes the child. Well, I mean, it's actually the same with any human being. We all perceive tension. And so if there's someone with a difficulty and you're less aware of really how you're contributing to that person even having more difficulty when you are in that tense state. And I think that's a big part of consciousness now, is this accepting of differences. And I mean, they could be even the differences of, you know, anything that goes on that aren't just, you know, physical or mental or, you know, and just whenever there's someone in difficulty, you send them, you know, more, let's say, peace and love, instead of sending them the tension and the barrier and the, because I really do believe that it adds to the difficulty instead of creating, you know, a safer space for people.
I totally agree. And I think it's so important if we recognize that each one of us has these unique abilities, and rather than squash them or decide no, you know, or judge them, allow them to be there and be in a place of acceptance. I think that's very important. I had somebody on my show who was transgender, and we were talking, and so I did a lot of research, and I found something that was just quite unusual. There was this family had a young, I'm trying to remember, had a young girl who really felt like a boy, and it wasn't like, okay, I'm just going to try this. I mean, really, she felt that way, and she was really depressed until what her parents did was they shifted schools. They allowed her to cut her hair shorter, and so that she could have a new life, because she was depressed. She was thinking of suicide. She was probably about 7 years old, and that. But
wow.
For the parents to be able to recognize that this was something that was really important, and it was, you know, that little girl needed that for her own life, for her own peace of mind. I mean, I thought that was beautiful that these parents had the courage, because it does take courage to do something and live differently, but that these parents were in a place of love and acceptance, and the little girl who was thinking suicide and not belonging, I mean, she didn't feel like she fit in her body. How strange is that?
Yeah, wow. And that's young, too, to have such an awareness of that and request it. Yeah, there's so much work to do out there. I mean, it's not just among, let's say, the people that we consider have special needs. I mean, every human being has certain fragilities. You know, I've got four kids, and I know just between them and all their group of friends, it's amazing how wonderful human beings are, and then, you know, but still how fragile they are. And every little moment of their life with little changes in the, you know, schools and, you know, apart from adolescence,
it's
hormone beautiful. Changes.
Right, and it's beautiful to watch those changes and watch these kids blossom. I came in with what they call mirror writing. So not that I was born that way, but when I was able to write, my handwriting was such that you couldn't read it unless you held it up to a mirror. So they call it mirror writing. I mean, obviously it changed, but my teachers would say to my parents, you know, what's wrong with this kid? I mean, how is she going to succeed? What is going to happen to her? How is she going to, she can't type, she can't cut. Anyway, so the point is that we do have our unique way. My brain probably works very differently. I've recently done research on what that means, and some people say that it's just incredibly gifted, and other people say that my head is messed up, but here I am. So
that's writing backwards like Da Vinci.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think what you're kind of mentioning, Dr. Jan, is the whole fact that, you know, we as, unfortunately, human race, fear and reject the things we don't understand. And because a lot of times it has nothing to do with, you know, as you described, even what you have gone through with, you know, kind of writing backwards and, you know, looking at these children, because most people don't understand, they kind of start rejecting that, and that they become afraid of that, and they don't even know how to handle it. And I think we've become,
you know, Daniel, that's a really good point, right? I think
society
so true.
So
sorry.
Afraid. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, you really said something that I think it's simple, but it's not simple. It's really profound. We are afraid of people who are different from us. We don't know what to do, or somebody that has these quirks, and so what we do in our fear is we retract and we don't allow ourselves to say, well, that person is, you know, she has a nice smile, and we don't allow ourselves to move forward. So I think that we have to change. I think that we need to be courageous to recognize that here we are, we have choices. Our choices are, do we spend the time in fear and rejection? Because that's what that fear leads to, Daniel, that you're describing, is if we're so afraid to really know this person, then we're going to back off and not. And what if that person was the most wonderful, brilliant, beautiful human being? What a loss to us if we didn't take that step, that chance, that choice.
And I think this is the lesson for all of us, because I mean, we've all been in situations where we don't quite know how to handle that. And unfortunately, what I do see happening is that we tend to focus on ourselves. And then, you know, again, that's kind of where the whole rejection, you know, comes, where, you know, we just kind of can't even accept that. And really what you're mentioning is for us to really get more understanding and, again, really be more open-minded to going, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, at fear from this person, but I will try to get more understanding and kind of more, you know, more education. And I think as you're mentioning this, you know, one way of getting this is start introducing this into the, you know, educational system that, you know, kids, I mean, there is so much bullying that's going around, and this is with kids that don't even have issues. But if somebody is just not quite fitting in with the popular kids, you know, they're going to be bullied in school. And it's so unfortunate that, you know, we as society are, you know, we have all of the information there is for us to have, but unfortunately, it almost seems like the more information we have, the more confusing it is, and the more, you know, the less tolerant of others we are actually becoming, unfortunately. And again, I'm not trying to paint a negative picture, but I kind of see that all the time. And unfortunately, the media is not helping it, because the more controversial, the more negative news, the more they kind of put it out there. And it's kind of sad to see that this is happening, because you've mentioned that this is something that you notice, in the 70s, and, you know, here we are quite a few decades after that, and we're in essence still dealing with the same issues. Now, maybe we're a little bit more aware, but I think on a whole, you know, as a society, as you mentioned, the one family, you know, they suing another family because they had a, you know, special child, and they didn't even drop the lawsuit after they moved, where clearly there was no more damage that maybe was going to be done. But
Right. Somehow,
you know, we became a society where we become entitled, and, you know, your problems, well, I'm just going to go and exploit that because I can. And it's kind of unfortunate.
It's definitely unfortunate. My bully-free book it's really based on interviews that I did with families of special needs. See, even though I've moved away from that, I really haven't. My heart is still with these families and these kids in many ways. And some of the stories, I mean, I didn't put all of them in the book, and I was interviewing these families and these kids, and there was one girl who was ridiculed in school and just because she was different. And she actually wanted to kill herself. She swallowed some lie or whatever that she found in a cabinet, and went to school and eventually one of the teachers was really on top of it, so they rushed her, you know, they rushed her to the hospital, and her parents came and she was saved. And this girl is now a in her 20s and is a manager in a program and she has received awards, and here she is. And so, you know, fast forward where she was in school and being ridiculed because she spoke funny. And I worked with a boy a few years ago. His family was from South Africa, so they had an accent. He had a very thick accent, and he was bullied. And actually, I think it was South Africa. I may not be totally correct, but he was bullied because of the way he spoke was different, and how he behaved was different, and he just seemed to be outside of the mainstream, whatever. And what happened is that one day outside of school, there were these few other kids who caught him, hung him by a tree, and thought it was the most riotous thing in the world, and started to make it, you know, started to use their little selfies and start to take pictures of it. Well, it went viral, and this child was on television, he and his family. But the point is, the cruelty that we're talking about. And again, I think what's important is to recognize that there's more to us that's alike than different. And if we're going to do anything to make this world a better place, to change and transform the fighting, the disagreements, the anger. I believe there's so much anger and road rage and anger outside. I think it's unbelievable. One time I was walking I'm on a roll, so you can stop me at any time. But there was a time about a year ago, I was walking in the park, and I'm seeing these young boys that are trying to get a frog, this frog on a hook, because a fishing rod, a hook. Now, if they did that, they were going to kill this frog. And I said, I stopped my walk, and I said, why are you doing that? I mean, it's not hurting you in any way. Why would you want to do that? They looked at me like I was, who is this weird lady trying to douse our fun? But to me, their fun was going to be to put this innocent frog, turtle frog at risk. Why do that? Sorry about me being on a roll.
you just mentioned something that I always ask, and I ask everybody, we somehow forget to ask, why do we do what we do? And I mean, this is just an example, right? I mean, you asked that question, but I think we as human race have forgot, because so often we do things even on our own or somebody else, and we have no idea a lot of times why we're doing these things. And one of the things for me that I always ask, okay, if somebody's doing something, just ask the question why, and stop. And I think with that story, you've made them think. Unfortunately, they didn't have much of a background as far as compassion and some of the other things. But again, chances are, and I think this is the biggest thing, there is a reason why they're doing what they're doing. Abuse or something that has happened or experience they have gone through, and this is unfortunately, their way of acting that out. But I think the question why is so critical, not only in business, in life, in families, in pretty well every situation, to really fully understand, if we're doing something, why? Why is this happening? And really start to self-examine ourselves. I can't remember who said that, and the biggest downfall of man is the unquestioned mind. And again, this is why, for me, the question why has become so important in the last few years.
I think it is
even
very
like in my research, what I find the easiest way to explain that is that all the impulses that come from the external world, that we receive in our nervous system that sends those impulses to our brain, they first go to our animal brain, our reptile brain. And it is amazing to observe the world from the animal brain that is only interested in the power, the territory, the flight or the fight. And the majority of people are really in that predator kind of mode, looking for prey. So, the why is that the consciousness has not evolved up to even the middle brain, or you can imagine not even to the frontal cortex, this is a little bit more technical, but we all have this animal brain, and it perceives the outside world, and it is always ready and alert for our survival. It tells us that there's danger. And getting back to the special needs children, our physiology will react because our brain says, with an unpredictable child who has, the attacks or whatever, that unpredictable child for our animal brain is exactly the same as a lion who wants us as prey, because we don't know how to handle that. And I believe, getting just the awareness that the why, the big why we are disturbed by that, is because our animal brain is just sending us that impulse that there's something unpredictable. And for our survival, quote, if we were still in the savannah, it would be danger. Then you got to count to three. Breathe and bring it up to the middle brain and then respond, But what I find is, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll add to it after.
Yeah, it was just what I feel like how we can evolve the consciousness is really just that very first awareness. Our animal brain is here for us to survive. Take a step higher than that brain realize that it is there for a reason. But, you know, we do have to overcome that initial nervous system reaction to anything that is, you know, unpredictable, or it could be that frog and trying to feel like you're the predator over this prey. And the human being deserves to live so much better than just what the animal brain tells us, you know?
No, I think that's really true. And I think it's important to ask why, and it's important to get to a place within your own being to recognize that, well, to do a little bit self-analysis. I think it's important to ask yourself that question. Why am I doing this? Not just what am I going to get from it? What's the benefit? But what's behind it? What are the reasons? And I think it's important that we develop ourselves and we develop our consciousness. And when our consciousness, as you're talking about, Diana, and Daniel, as you're talking about asking that question, when we get to a place where we're just not operating from an instinctive, okay, power play, if you will, and we're looking more at what our actions, our responses are going to do and going to bring, then we're really changing our behavior and we do have to change ourselves. We have to be able to get out of that animal brain, as you're talking, and we have to be able to recognize that there's more than just that. Yes, we have that, and there's some wonderful aspects of that, but is that enough? I mean, that limits us, and we are so unlimited in who we are and who we can be, and it's why not spend this lifetime operating from a sense of, well, there's more to me, there's more to this, there's more that's to be discovered, and there's more to my consciousness. And when I trust and I allow myself to see and experience who I am and my vast potentiality.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you know what, Dr. Joanne, we've been at this for almost 50 minutes here, and we can probably go on for another 50 minutes, do another show, but we'll have to wrap up soon here. Why don't you tell us again, how can we support, you know, how can our listeners support the, you know, your book launch, and, you know, where can, you know, our listeners go and purchase More Heaven, and at the same time, how can we maybe, you know, our listeners can get in contact with you and get just more information on some of these fascinating things that you're mentioning?
Well, they can go to drjoannewhite.com and find out more about my shows, different resources, free articles. And the book is in process right now for publication. Then the launch date on the internet is March 15th. So we're going to have a special Amazon. It's going to be able to be purchased on Amazon. So I'll be able to do that. And I will be keeping everybody updated. So if they want to be part of the launch, they could contact us. I think it's important to be able to spread this word, because, again, I don't think it's just about me, but they could go to www.drjoannewhite.com or 1-877-DOCWHITE, or my email, joanne@drjoannewhite.com. I answer people's emails, and I think that this book, and there are many people, many pioneers out there, is a way to, again, to shift our consciousness and to be able to get us out of our animal brain and to get to a place of love and acceptance for other people. And also, when we're doing that, it's also about loving and accepting ourselves.
100%. And again, Dr. Jan, I want to thank you for sharing this with us. And again, I wasn't really quite sure where this conversation is going to go, and I think we have certainly made it very relevant to everyday things. And I think this is what it comes down to, because as you mentioned, it's not just, you know, with the special needs, you know, children, autism. I think a lot of the lessons that you have shared and you're going to share in your book are really things that we can use in everyday. And again, it's not just about you know, what is kind of happened and where our society is. But I always tell all of my clients, you know, what can I learn? How can I take something from, you know, what I have heard? How can I go and apply that to my life? Because that's, to me, where life, you know, life in our world can change when we start really taking responsibility for ourselves. And for me, during this interview, have certainly, you know, certainly opened up my mind to the fact that, you know what, even though I want to sit here and say, you know what, I kind of know what's happening out there, there is so much more to learn. And again, being more accepting, you know, accepting of others, and really not becoming selfish, as unfortunately our world is, you know, turning into with the media and everything that's going on. There are these hopes, and it's a matter of just, you know, learning more and expanding ourselves beyond what it is that, you know, we are ourselves.
Well, thank you both so much, Daniel and Diane. I think that that you guys are great, and this is a vehicle for doing just that. The way you guys interview and having your show is another way of reaching out to the public, to those people that need to wake up and also see their own beauty and their own consciousness, but also see what's out there and what's possible. So thank you for all that you do and for having me on the show today.
Yeah, thank you. It was great talking to you.
Yeah,
my pleasure.
Great. Okay, well, again, thank you. This is Daniel Hanzelka. To learn more about Dr. Joanne, you may go on her website, drjoannewhite.com. And to learn more about me, Daniel Hanzelka, you can go to resetwarrior.com. And you're going to be listening to this on the Journey to Success Radio. We will also have links to Dr. Joanne's website on there so that you can go and visit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Journey to Success Radio. If you or anyone you know would like to be interviewed for the show, email Tom at tom2tall.com for details.